Magog encountered its first chemstorm. The only reason the captive companions were even aware of it was that a klaxon sounded throughout the train, and the loudspeaker system announced an alert. All access ports to the outside, from cargo bays to firing slits, were to be sealed and left that way until the all-clear sounded. Doc, in the special compartment he had been given, continued to sit, sip sherry, and read the Odyssey on the screen in his room. He rather enjoyed the sensation of being totally insulated from the evil and madness without. Of course, he was all too aware of the incipient madness and evil inside the armored train. For all his image of being rock-steady and straightforward as a brick, the General was mercurial, as Doc had learned from close at hand. Doc, who had long since acquired the trick of playing at having one of his spells, when he was in fact perfectly lucid, knew Hubertus was pressing the General to submit them to what the intel chief termed interrogation. Of course, Doc knew a euphemism for torture when he heard one. The General wasn't so much likely to be swayed by his intel chief's rather whiny importuning as he was to dig in his heels and resist. But he also might decide at literally any moment to give his captives over to the question on his own whim, ignited by the obsessive lust burning within him to locate the Great Redoubt and the key to continental conquest he believed it contained, as quickly as possible. What could Doc do about it? Personally, aside from hoping for an opportunity he understood was unlikely to present itself, nothing. Therefore, he had resolved to await his fate, and meanwhile enjoy the comforts of his captivity as long as possible. He, of all the companions, had spent the most time in captivity, and was least bothered by it. But bother him it did. It always had. He longed for the day his comrades would rescue themselves, because he knew that when that time came, he would be delivered as well. He did wonder, though, whether the death of his great friend Ryan Cotter might just have fatally undermined the morale of the group. It had partially deranged poor Jack, as manifested by his continued insistence that their leader wasn't in fact dead, a phenomenon Mildred termed denial. Individually, they were all quite remarkable in their abilities. He modestly, and not altogether correctly, excluded himself from such characterization. But had they become so reliant upon the example, courage, and resourcefulness of Ryan that they could no longer act effectively? He couldn't know. All he could do was bide his time and read and pour himself another bit of sherry. The train continued on for another hour and then stopped, a surprisingly smooth and quiet process compared to the trains Mildred had heard in her previous life. It halted on a bridge over a running stream. A team in full chemical protective equipment suits from train stores went out to test the water for pH and presence of toxic chems. When they radioed that the water was acceptably pure, the General ordered Magog unsealed. Pumps were deployed, and a platoon of men clambered on top of the train to hose it down. All the wags, even the soft-shelled ones, had metal skins, and thus a certain resistance to the chems. But even the special alloy armor could be degraded by too much exposure. So despite the General's growing impatience, a halt had to be made. Non-essential personnel were allowed to stretch their legs. JB and Mildred met on a dirt road that ran parallel to the tracks. They hugged and kissed, a lot less fervently than they wanted since they had an audience, and then, fingers linked, began to saunter along the road. Mildred was balancing on a rut like a schoolgirl and giggling when she fell over.
Thought you'd want to run through the flowers.
To the left and right of the tracks, the land was covered by fields of wildflowers that stretched clear to the horizons, a scene of wildly incongruous beauty despite the overcast. But Mildred shook her head, making her beaded dread swing.
No, John. I don't trust flowers that can open up again so soon after a chem storm.
Makes sense.
When there was no one close by, she halted, faced him, and took his hands.
JB, they're on to us.
How do you mean?
Listen to me. This train has been all over the continent over the past few years. Everywhere they go, they suck up all the information the way they're pumping water out of that stream, as if their lives depended on it, which they do. And what do you think they keep hearing? These wild-ass tales about a bunch of traveling troublemakers consisting of a red-headed beauty, a feral albino teen, a doddering old fart, a blaster freak, a black woman, and a one-eyed killer. And this traveling circus gets around even more places than they do. Now you can be sure our boy Captain Mark had counted the buttons on that big old coat of Ryan's before he fell into the Grand Canyon. And if he didn't, that crusty old Rhino Banner sure did. 5 hits out of a possible 6, do the math. You can bet the general or his intelligence gnomes did.
But Christy is...
They've got to reckon either something happened to her lately or they just plain missed her.
She took his hand.
John, they've got to know.
Well, what can we do about it?
I was hoping you'd know. Better yet, I was hoping you'd worked out a plan of escape.
JB let go of her hands, turned away, took off his glasses and polished them.
I've been trying, but they're doing an ace-in-the-line job of keeping us separated. I could spring Jack easy, I reckon, but the general's keeping Doc tucked in his coat pocket, and the one's no easier to get at than the other. Damn, I ought to know how to take care of myself. Been doing it since I was a kid, but I surely do miss Ryan. I can't stop thinking if he was here, he would have worked out a way to spring us all before we crossed the Grandy.
Don't berate yourself, John. There are circumstances nobody can prepare for. We're in some now.
You're right, Millie. As usual. I ought to know better than to argue with a woman so much older than me.
She lightly punched his arm.
Ouch. But I think you're right about something else. They know who we are, which means we're living on borrowed time till they decide to really start digging into what we might know. That pretty boy Mark been pumping you?
Oh, what do you mean by that, John?
Dark night, Millie. I don't mean it like that. Shit, I'm no good with words. Sometimes it seems I do more damage with my mouth than with my blasters. I meant to ask if he'd been trying to get information out of you. Nothing more.
Consciously, that's all you meant. But it's okay, John. I understand. I know how you must wonder. I wonder the same thing if some foxy young thing was slinking around you.
She'd have to get by old Leo first.
She took his hands again.
I know you don't like dealing with this kind of thing. But listen to me. You're my man, Armorer. I'm not shopping for any replacements, and I'm not straying.
She flew to him, wrapped him in her arms, and squeezed him tightly.
I won't betray you. I won't betray myself.
Good. There have been too many folks sniffing around you lately.
She pulled her head back to gaze into his face.
John. Don't you see? Even if I'd never met you, I couldn't give in to Mark. Because it would mean accepting I was a slave, and I'll die first. Do you hear me? I'll die.
All right, Millie. I heard you. And I will too, unless you ease off on the bear hug and let me breathe.
Instead, she kissed him passionately. He returned it. They broke apart.
Whew. Now, if I can just find somebody to put my spine back in place.
What the hell could that possibly be?
Storm coming. Christy and Paul were fighting a headwind today. For all her determination, Christy was endlessly tempted to ask her companion to power up his little 2-stroke mill. But she knew their fuel supply couldn't be large. One more mile, she promised herself, as she had for the last 20. She could smell rain in the air. That was a reassuring sign. She wasn't smelling toxic chems. When she turned in her seat to look ahead, though, the clouds looked anything but reassuring. They were clotted and yellow, shading into brown. That might mean tornadoes, which weren't a big improvement on chem storms. Paul's been this way before, she reminded herself. Chem storms and twisters alike were common out here. If he hadn't learned to spot them well in advance, as well as what to do when he did, he'd have left his bones bleaching along the tracks long since.
Tell me more about the Technomads.
What do you want to know?
Who are they? How do they live? Why are they called Technomads?
Actually, there was a question she'd been burning to ask him, but she felt she needed to get him well primed and flowing freely before she did. Otherwise, he might clam up and never answer it.
That's a lot of questions, Missy. Too many to fit in my poor old head at once, much less answer. But I'll do what I can. Like I told you, they're free-roving tribes. They travel all over the continent.
So do I. But I've never run into them before, or even heard of them.
But maybe she had. Childhood tales of vagabonds with fantastic powers, sometimes malevolent, most often totally indifferent to the doings of others. Details in the stories were few and fantastic, but common themes of awe and dread scanned through them all.
They keep kind of a low profile. They learn that the hard way.
Seems to be the only way around here.
It's that madness I was talking about, Christy Roth.
Yeah, I heard you before.